A Study in Maltheism. From The Gods Have Horns by Saltiside and Shadow Wasserson. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based upon the works of Andrew Hussey. Your name is Rose Lalonde, and you are the most hated student to ever blight the halls of Our Lady Who Is Without Mother or Father Academy for Girls, or Our Lady Without, for a title that's less of a mouthful. Those less well-read in theology are sometimes confused by the school's name, since the Book of the Zodiac teaches that all the gods are motherless and fatherless. However, the Seer of Mind, patron goddess of the Academy, is considered an orphan in a more ecclesiastically profound way than the others, although you're not sure why. Regardless, you can safely say that you spend the majority of your time at this prestigious institution in the engaging study of just what it is that you have to do before the administration has no choice but to expel you. As of yet, all your efforts have been fruitless. Your blasted mother is far too influential of a figure for anyone here at the school to want to cross her. She is an alumna of the school herself, an orphan girl who went on to take her higher education at Derleth University, and now she is a high-ranking admin for Skynet Laboratories, which everybody knows, but nobody says, carries out research for the gods. She is, for all intents and purposes, untouchable. And she has made it clear on other occasions that she intends for you to finish out your education here no matter what you do. Even if you should manage to burn the whole campus down, you would no doubt spend the rest of your childhood in some solitary school feeding cell, but you would still get your education. This came much to the disappointment of the principal, who once slipped you a box of matches during a parent-teacher conference when your mother caught the action and told you both that it would do no good. You and the principal don't exactly like each other, but common goals have a way of making allies out of the blackest enemies. Not that you're actually black for her, of course. Even if you were so affected by the gods, you're sure that you wouldn't be directing caliginous feelings in her direction, nor anyone's really. You think that you deny yourself a kismesis just to spite the gods. That kind of attitude is exactly why you're in detention, of course. You wrote an admittedly scathing essay, well-constructed and thoroughly argued. That couldn't have been more scandalous had you named it 95 proofs that the teachers are engaging in lewd acts with the students, with details of their exact activities, and nailed the pages to somebody's door. Actually, now that you think about it, that doesn't sound half bad for round two. And you get out your pen and paper to begin drafting an outline when there is a crackle over the intercom. You ignore it. More interested in your burgeoning next project, you'll have to make some adaptations to account for the switched sexes, but you think that you'll be able to draw on some material from your last creative piece, The Circle of the Sword, whose sleaziness was matched only by its blasphemousness. It was about an all-boys school and one for wizards, but you can fix those details. It helps that you were inspired by some of your peers at Our Lady Without to begin with. Your thoughts are interrupted when you hear your name through the speaker, spoken in an uncharacteristically tight and anxious tone, and look up.
To the principal's office. I repeat, Miss Lalonde, do not keep him waiting.
Odd. You haven't done anything new that is worth calling you to the principal's office. And who is him? Still, hope springs eternal. In this case, hope of being expelled. So you sigh and pack your things up to go visit the principal. You know the way there by heart. The principal's door at the end of the well-trodden corridor is ornate and heavy, but it swings open while you are still several feet away, revealing Principal Garland, her forehead shiny with perspiration and her eyes looking half-crazed. Finally, you hear, "Come in, Lalonde." The principal reaches out for you, and lips curl into a fearful smile as she looks over her shoulder. "She's here, my prince." "Prince?" Curious, you peer around Principal Garland to see who it could possibly be, and your book bag drops from your hands. You are so dead. You haven't seen a god before in person, only a recording of a speech by the mage at one of your mother's work functions, but you still don't need to think about it to realize who's standing in front of you. Despite your best efforts, the school's theology lessons and your mother's own drunken rants and recollections have sunk deep into your mind. And his names and titles start spilling out into your awareness almost by reflex. Standing there, casually leaning against Principal Garland's desk, is the Stormcrow. He who is the evening and the morning, the aquatic, the white. Thrice formed Eridan Ampora. And though your lizard brain wants to vault out the window and run for the hills, you manage to stay calm. You compose your face, you quiet your mind, as you learned to do in morning meditation. If you mess this up, you won't get a second chance. There's a reason they call this one the Wrathful. You stand there, book bag at your feet, and keep your voice as steady as you can. Hello, Prince of Hope? To what do I owe this honor? He scoffs in your face. Don't give me that bullshit, Rose Lalonde. That's not you at all. He's not wearing his godhood. You know from your mother that most of them hate that kind of formal and ritual attire. Instead, he is dressed in the most ridiculous and ostentatious getup that your eyes have ever suffered to behold. You know for a fact that he doesn't need those glasses, much less a slightly cracked set. And his yellow and white scarf is almost longer than he is. Emblazoned on his frilly purple shirt is the aspect of three sets of stylized curling wings, the symbol of his divinity. You feel the blood drain out of your face because you just noticed what he's holding. It's a stapled sheaf of paper, and it has your name signed in your distinctive loops across the top. Principal Garland drags you into the room, your mind reeling and your every instinct screaming to run, not to go closer. How did he get your essay? Did the school send it to him? Why? Why would they... Lisa, he says, and it takes you a moment to realize he's addressing the principal. You can go, now. Principal Garland gapes at him, mouth flopping open like a fish. Yes, sir. She bows stiffly, then straightens and leaves. But before she shuts the door behind her, she spares you a single look of pity. You are now trapped in the principal's office with one of the most feared of the gods. I read your paper, he says. I liked it. Every last word. And then he flips through the pages and begins to read from one of them. As was well said by John K. Roth, everything hinges on the proposition that the gods possess, but fail to use well enough, the power to intervene decisively at any moment to make history's course less wasteful. Thus, in spite and because of their sovereignty, these gods are everlastingly guilty, and the degrees run from gross negligence to mass murder. He smiles, teeth sharp, and you want to run away. Maybe if you throw something, if you distract him, you might be able to get past him, away from him and the school both. Run away, change your name, never think too hard when the gods are present in your mind. They're not omniscient. You could do it. But all your plans fall apart, and you can only stare in horror as he continues to read. At first pacing back and forth, then walking behind Principal Garland's desk and sitting in her chair. The gods, those supreme fascists, as Palladius called them, are nothing more than despots and liars. They're powerful. But Euthyphro demonstrated that power alone does not a god make. They made the universe, but like a clockwork device, it now runs on its own, and by their own admission, it will continue to function without their interference. They are landlords who charge too much rent. They're authors who don't know that they should step back and let their work speak for itself. They're not inherently good, as anyone can realize after 30 seconds of meditation on the Dark Carnival, and they are not worth worshipping. Shit. The gods don't make a habit of killing heretics, but sometimes there are deaths. Sometimes they make exceptions to their unspoken rule. You swallow and glance around the room again for anything you could use as a weapon or distraction. Certificates of scholarly excellence? The landline phone? A lamp? At least you have the desk between you and him, but... Breathe, he says. But you barely register the words. I said to fucking breathe, he says again. And your frantic thoughts are swept aside by Violet. You've never heard the tinge before, but you understand it now, how deeply it cuts to your core. The purple in his words is like nothing you have ever experienced. And all of a sudden you could not deny, even if you wanted to, that what is talking to you possesses a wholly different nature than your own. You take a deep, shuddering breath. There you go. Much better, Rose. Your mother raised you well. You are such a mess. You would have liked to have at least died with dignity, but no. You sit down in one of the upholstered chairs reserved for prospective parents and turn away, hyperventilating. You seem to be missing the part where I said that I liked this. You are as capable of sarcasm as the rest of us, you reply. You think in isolics. I guess I can dally in it once in a while too, but I don't deal in lies. You know that. I particularly like the part where you deconstructed Richard Dawkins, by the way. Sometimes I wish we could pick our theologians, but we try not to interfere that much. Then what do you want with me? I want to take you under my thrice-formed wings, Aridan says, opening his arms and gesturing grandly. You're a very special girl, Rose. I don't make a big deal out of it, but people like you are my soldiers. There's more to the game than you know, but you and I, our job is the same. We tell the gods when they're fucking up. So, I'm not going to die. You're special. And not only is he not going to punish you for your heresy, but he's going to reward you. It seems too good to be true. He smiles and shakes his head, steepling his fingers. I'll bet you're tired of this school. Am I right? You nod vigorously and he continues. I can teach you more than these school mums ever dreamed of, if you want. Ah, there's the catch. You want me to be a disciple, like my mother. Consider it a partnership, Moore. Even the scientists and the teachers, they look up to me. He stands and leans forward over the desk, suddenly taller than seems natural. He looks you square in the eyes, pink meeting purple. But I want somebody to look at me, keep me honest, as I do for the other gods. I'll teach you everything I know, just as fast as you can take it in. And in return, you promise to speak your mind about it all. Aridan looks away and you blink. You hadn't realized how hypnotic his gaze had been until he was no longer fixing you with it. You close your eyes and breathe, the deep violet afterimage still dancing behind your eyelids. When you look back up, he's at the door. Just consider it, he says. And then he leaves you to your thoughts.
For the text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Call Me Saltiside and Shadow_Wasserson. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.